Whoop, whoop, a Friday, whoop, 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 LZ. Always good going into the weekend. You got plans? What do you got cooking for this weekend?
Listen, listen, sir, listen. I have been dieting. I have been working out. I have shed much, if not most, of my Rona fat. And I am heading to vacation. I'm going to Palm Springs. I'm going with my husband. We're meeting up with some friends. And I am going to be shirtless in a pool for 7 consecutive days. So help me God.
Well, you got, I like a man with a plan, LZ. And that is very the plan.
And by the way,
I like it.
If I'm sober for more than an hour, I'm doing it wrong. I'm doing it wrong.
Okay, very quickly before we get to it, I want both of you guys to weigh in on this. Because I'm just, you're heading into a vacation week. I'm just coming out of a vacation week. There is usually a day in the middle of that vacation where you're like, I need to pump the brakes. At least for me, it's like usually that Wednesday or Thursday. It's like, all right, I've had 4 or 5 days. I've got after it pretty good. I need to collect my breath so I can hit the next 3 or 4 days appropriately before I have to go back to work. Do you not have that one day in the middle where you kind of go, ah?
Travis, you brand new? Raj, is Travis brand new?
Not one day. Raj, not one day.
Jorge,
I mean, it
Jorge,
must be.
Is this man brand new?
Man.
Need I remind you that me, Keyshawn, and Raj were at the little Waffle House at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and we're right there on time for the show. We just stayed up and did the rundown and then did the show. Did I remind you?
Oh, I remember that show. I think I was the only one talking that day. Yes.
Oh, no,
we
were fine.
Off in the hotel room.
I remember.
No,
you weren't. Trust me.
I remember vividly. Raj, I remember us being fine, don't you? I remember us being really thoughtful and insightful. I remember that.
Yeah. I remember Dan looking at me like, why are you the only one that's saying anything today? I'm like, well, aww. I'll let you figure that out. I'll let you figure that out. All right.
The point is, going home isn't the option. I always go hard. That's right.
Yeah, well, good luck. I hope that you make it back on the other side. And I hope when you get back, the Lakers have figured out how to make a three-point shot. Here you go. Here are the numbers in the last 4 games. Going back to Toronto, the Lakers were 10 of 40. There's another trend going on here that you need to look at other than they're just missing a bunch. 10 of 40, 9 of 26. That's the only one that's kind of normal, 35%. Then the last 2 nights, 5 of 37 against OKC, and then last night against Houston, 2 of 19. Not only are they not making them, they're taking fewer as they go through it. That, to me, is the bigger problem, the fact that the ball is just not going in the hole.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when the threes aren't falling, what the Lakers need to do is remind themselves that they have the best front court in the league, that they were absolutely dominant in paint scoring, and that they have not one, but two top five players in the league. LeBron, all intents and purposes, a second at worst in the MVP voting. Anthony Davis very well may find himself getting some MVP votes, but he certainly is in the conversation of receiving votes, if not the award for best defensive player. Mm-hmm. When you have two guys in the running for individual awards on the same team, and you have the best record in your conference, you're going to figure some stuff out. You're going to make adjustments. Talent is going to win out. If they can't get these threes to fall, then they need to just rely upon the other aspects of their team that made them so dominant, which is their defense and their interior scoring. I'm okay if we don't make any threes all the way to the championship. I'm not going to sit up at the confetti with the parade with Jeannie and go, yeah, girl, you know, but they didn't hit no threes. I'm not going to do that. Are you doing that? Nobody's doing that. You just want to win. So if we need to turn this into 80s basketball and play inside in and play some aggressive defense and make it hard on guys to score, if that's what we need to do, We have the personnel to do it. Statistically, it says we've been doing that as well. So I'm bothered by the lack of made shots for an open looks. I am bothered by that, but I also know that that's not how we got here anyway. We weren't the Houston Rockets or the Golden State Warriors. We weren't relying upon the three to get us there. It was our defense and our offensive efficiency, particularly in the paint, that got us here anyway.
The shooting is on the list of things that I'm concerned about, but it's not at the top. Because like I've said a million times, if you're a 36, 37% three-point shooter, that's what you are. You're going to make a little better than one out of three, right? That's what you are. And if you miss 30 in a row, that means a whole bunch of makes are coming up. That's just how that works. That if you have a big enough sample like we do at this point in the season, they're just cold. That being said, you don't want to see anybody go 2 for 19. That's a big deal. You don't want to see anybody go 5 for 37. That's a big deal. They've made 7 three-pointers in the last two games, and after taking 56 of them, that's a problem. If you're 7 of 56, that sucks. That also is not the biggest issue. The biggest issue for me last night, and let me start by saying this, I understand LeBron didn't play last night. I understand that LeBron is, you know, nursing his groin injury or just decided, you know, tonight was a night to take some time off and catch your breath. That's fine. They did not look crisp last night, and they did not look crisp the night before against Oklahoma City. They just look disinterested. They look flat. They look like they're not pushing hard the way that I would like to see them as we get closer to the playoffs really start to have that edge, because I am a big believer in that there is no switch to hit. There are very few sports where the switch is available. If there is somebody that can do it, it's LeBron James. I believe that to be true. But if you get into the habit of kind of floating through stuff, and then all of a sudden you need to be 100% present from the very first second, it's hard to kind of adopt that mindset. You need to start adopting that mindset long before game one of the first round. And the last couple of games I've seen from the Lakers, they look completely disengaged. And that, to me, is the top of the issue.
Well, they looked at, because if they were to lose the rest of the games, where do they slide to, Travis?
Nowhere. They stay where they are, number one.
They slide into first, where they are right now. So yeah. The impetus to be engaged, you know, it's, I can see why there would be a little bit of a lull here. I could certainly see that. They've got the number one seed locked up. A seeding, by the way, that's pretty relatively worthless when it comes to the situation that they're in.
It's they're arguably worse than the number two. Two, yes, might be better.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they are literally playing. There's no benefit for wins and virtually no punishment for losses. That's hard, man. That's hard to stay motivated to do. But listen to the statistic. The team is actually getting more catch and shoots opportunities in the bubble than before the bubble. In other words, they're getting more open look opportunities now than when they racked up the 49 wins before we stopped. So again, the offense isn't so problematic that you have to panic. They just aren't knocking down these open shots. Almost a third of their shots they're getting, according to LakerScreenAndRoll.com, almost a third of the shots they're getting right now are catch and shoot opportunities. Those are usually wide open looks. They just aren't falling.
And no.
By the way, if they do fall, what's the, you win a game that doesn't impact your overall record, helps you in any way? I mean, so I can see that being, I can understand why, you know, I can understand why the guys won't necessarily be motivated.
Yes, and you're right. If they win, they're the number one seed. If they lose, they're the number one seed. So what difference does it make? I get that. I get that that's probably human nature, that once I have something and there's literally no result that's going to change what I have, your intensity is going to wane. I think that's very, very normal. But what the punishment for the losses is momentum and sharpness and crispness, because the Lakers were not playing to become a number one seed. This is what we talked about earlier in the week. The Lakers did not start this season, have their first team meeting, have that first practice and say, all right, let's go out there and be the number one seed in the Western Conference. That was not the goal. The goal is to win an NBA championship. Now, maybe the number one seed helps you get to that goal, but playing like crap heading into the playoffs certainly doesn't do it. So the penalty might not be tangible in a sense of you're going to suffer in seeding, but the penalty could be we just haven't played good basketball in 2 weeks and we almost forgot what it feels like. Now, LeBron, as we've said a million times, LeBron is the ultimate answer to every question you want to ask on a basketball court. Hey, how do we fix blank? LeBron. Hey, how do we stop blank? LeBron. How do we win this game? LeBron. That's a really good answer to any question you want to ask. But this team looks different than they looked prior to the bubble. This was my number one concern, that when you have a long layoff like this and you restart, it's almost like a new season, and this looks like a new team and not necessarily a better one.
No, I agree with you. I mean, you don't want to develop bad habits. This is true. But there's playoff Rondo, and there damn sure is playoff LeBron. And if the guy who finishes second in MVP voting or first in MVP voting has another gear or a switch, look out league. That's how you get to 9 finals, by the way, because you're MVP and people all know there's another level. I still believe he has another level. And every LeBron James team goes as he goes. I've seen him go into situations and give you 45, 15, and 7 and stop his teams from being eliminated and left the opposing team, whether it's the Pacers or the Celtics, wondering, what just happened? I thought we had him. Well, there's a guy named LeBron James, and he's kind of tough to kill. Even when he loses in the finals, which people like to bring up all the time, once you get past that Dallas series, you can't point to a single series, win or lose, in which LeBron James wasn't the best. And that's including the times in which they were on the court with Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. That's just how I feel. He has been the best player in the postseason every year for damn near a decade. I'm feeling pretty good about it.
He is a really, really good emergency plan. When nothing else is working, let's just do the LeBron thing. That works for sure. All right. The Mac Show is coming up next. Mark Anthony Kay from LAFC joins us next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right. You heard it right there. It is time for The Mac Show. So let's start right there. Mac, what does it feel like to be out of the bubble? What is it like to have gone in and come out and live to tell the tale?
It's life-changing, man. Like, the bubble, honestly, there's no way you can prepare for it whatsoever. But coming back to normal life, coming back to L.A., you just realize how much better your situation was here than it was there. And it's still taking a while to adapt to normal life again because we're so used to being in a routine. And for the last couple of days, I felt lazy, didn't really know what to do with myself. But I'm definitely glad that we're home. It's obviously unfortunate that we didn't come home with the trophy, but it's always nice to be back home.
When you think about your time in the bubble, what was the hardest aspect of it mentally for you? Was it not seeing your girlfriend? Was it, you know, not going to Starbucks? Like, what was it?
I think the hardest part is knowing that you don't have control. You know what I mean? Like that you're put in an area where you have to follow 1,000 rules in order to have the opportunity to play something you love. You know, I think that was definitely a tough part on me and a lot of the players. Like I had said to you guys earlier, the only fun part was really training, you know, and that's for an hour out of the day. So for the rest of the day, you're not doing anything. Like, I don't think it's good for anyone to be in a hotel that long. So that part was definitely tough, especially mentally, just because it's, you know, you just feel like it's not normal. You've never practiced it before. Who knows? Maybe in 10 years, this is something we have to do every year. You get used to it. But yeah, it was definitely a weird experience.
Mark Anthony Kay joining us here on The Morning Show. Is there anything that you can take from that experience that will make you a better player? And maybe not like technically, but just as far as preparation goes, mental toughness, is there anything you take out of that and say, I'm going to apply this to the rest of my career?
Yeah, I definitely think like mental resilience is like the common theme when you go into things like this. And if you can grow from something like this, it will definitely help you and make certain situations in the future much more easier for you to handle. So, you know, tournament style is definitely a difficult thing. Not a lot of players have to do it in their career, but, you know, I've been fortunate where I've been in Gold Cups, but they've never been like this, you know? So even in the world, the next two World Cups to come, I don't think the experience will be exactly like this, but I think if you can get stronger mentally through tough times, it'll help you in the future, no matter what. So definitely the mental resilience, I'd say.
So now what? You know, obviously the tournament is wrapping up. Once it's done, now what? What happens to LAFC? What happens to MLS?
Yeah, so we're back training now. And I think the MLS has a tentative schedule that should be released very soon about playing games in two phases. It'll be in market. You know, we'll stay on the West Coast. I think we'll play about 6 games in 22 days. That's the first phase. And then the second phase is a similar thing. So the league is going to keep going. You know, we have games to play for, and there'll be an MLS Cup champion at the end of the year. So it's back to work for us. Obviously, the tournament didn't go as planned, but, you know, now we're back into the regular season, and we just got to keep pushing forward and pick up 3 points as often as we can.
Mark Anthony Kay joining us here on the Mac Show. And LZ and I were just talking about this. And take me through, as a professional athlete, the idea, the practicality, and the ability to, quote unquote, throw the switch. Can you do that? Or if you find yourself falling into bad habits, because we were talking about the Lakers not playing well inside their bubble and whether or not they're going to be able to throw that switch. Can you do that as an athlete, fall into kind of a malaise, and then just decide, okay, we're not going to do that anymore?
I think it's definitely possible. You know, that's the mental resilience that we were just talking about earlier. Being able to flip a switch is awesome if you're able to do it. You know what I mean? Those are the top athletes in the world that can just, you know, do things that others can't do. And then the next thing you know, they're either scoring 30 points on you or they have a hat trick. You know, there's just people who are God gifted like that. But, yeah, in tournament style, it's interesting. So don't be surprised in the NBA if there's teams that are shocking people. You know what I mean? If you have a good camaraderie in your group and, you know, you got a coach who's challenging you and pushing you guys, then, you know, players will start to perform better. And the players who are at the top, yeah, it's going to be harder for them because they got more to lose. You know what I mean? So you got to stay mentally sharp throughout the whole thing. So with the Lakers right now, yeah, you know, like obviously there's going to be a little dip. And I think so when you haven't played for so long together and, you know, you're dealing with all the family stuff and the pandemic. So, yeah, it's just going to see who has more mental resilience. The talent is there. But I think the mental part is huge in games like tournaments like this.
I'm going to ask you a question that usually gets Raj yelling at me, but I'm going to ask it anyway because that's just how I'm wired. There's an uncomfortable trend that seems to be brewing, which is LAFC, lots of talent, can have fantastic regular seasons, but you haven't lifted a trophy yet.
In a tournament,
exactly. Not the playoffs. None of this little tournament. Why do you think that is?
You know, there's each one is different. You know, I think we're still a young club and we're trying to create and grow more leaders within the group. You know, I heard you guys talking about LeBron, like playoff LeBron, you know, playoff Rondo. Like those guys are leaders who have been through it, through the thick and thin, and they understand what it takes to get big wins, you know. And I think as a young club with a lot of young players, that's where we're trying to head. That's the next level for us. Can we have 11 leaders on the field all the time? Can we make sure that goals don't go in on corners in the 90th minute? Can we make sure we shut down a game even if we're up 1 or 2 nothing? Like that's the next step for us, you know? And I think being a young club, you don't get a lot of opportunities to be tested in those situations. And if you do and you fail, you know, people look at you like you guys can't do it, you know? But to be realistic, it's something that is going to get better, obviously, with time. So we wanted to get better quickly so we can, you know, hold some trophies and stuff, like you said. But I definitely think it's having those leaders with experience on the field who are going to help drive the team forward through tough times.
Mac, who is that guy for you guys right now? That when it starts to get tight, when you need somebody to step up and take charge, who's that guy on the squad right now?
you know, I think we all have certain times where we can do it. You know, I think there's games where I can do it. I think there's games where Edward is a great example of it. You know, Diego, obviously Carlos is a huge player who's been all over the world, played with the best players in the world. That's someone that, you know, you can lean on. And I think the more players we can get who are like that, then the more dangerous we'll be, because we have the skill and we have the talent, you know. So it's just, it's a process. You can't, a lot of these guys are 20, 21. Asking them to be leaders on their team is a big ask, but that's what the standard is here at LAFC, and I'm still not the leader I need to be, and I'm 25, so I see where they're coming from, and it's just it has to be a collective push to get better.
Have you seen Zlatan on his ship?
Oh my God, that thing is huge.
What can we do, brother, to get some of that Zlatan life? We need some of that Zlatan.
Oh, my God. We got to score over 500 goals in our respective career, man.
That's it, huh?
Hit the 500 milestone mark in something, and I think you'll be an inch closer to that.
No, that was quite a boat.
It's absolutely bonkers. What is it like for you as a 25-year-old to be in L.A., and see so much winning happening? Do you get juice from that when you look up and you see the Lakers are kicking ass, and you look over and you see the Dodgers are kicking ass, you guys are kicking ass? Do you pay attention to other teams like that in the city?
Yes and no. You know, I've always had this idea that LA was this, you know, sports hub where it just breeded successful teams, you know? So it's nice to be officially a part of it. But, you know, their games are very different than ours. And if they're doing well, great. If they're not doing well, I don't think it affects our performance. But it is nice for the city, you know. If I look from an outside perspective for sports fans of L.A., yeah, it's a great time. So no, I'm glad that I'm a part of that. But, no, it doesn't really give me any more motivation to push harder because other teams are doing well.
All right.
Do you know which team won the? Do you know which team won the last championship for the city?
Oh, boy. Trick question coming here.
It's not a trick question.
I want to say the Kings, maybe? I don't know.
Yes, that's right.
Ba-ba.
Yeah.
Ba-ba. No, he's right.
It is your L.A. Sparks, baby. Put some respect on those women's names.
Sparks?
Why'd you say it like
that? I didn't know that.
I'm about to kick
I didn't know.
See?
I didn't even know. I didn't know.
You didn't know they existed, or you didn't know they won a championship?
I didn't know they won a championship.
Don't let them do that to you, Mac. You got the question right. You got the Kings is the right answer to that question. So there you go.
All right, good.
You're talking
hockey.
Against
I gotta know a little bit of hockey from Toronto, you know? So there's a Canadian on there.
Of course. Welcome back to the real world. We'll talk to you again. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. LZ, no one has gotten your question right so far. You've hit people with that. I don't think anybody's gotten it right.
Not even the Sparks players. They go, for real, it was us.
Really? You don't say. Cool. All right.
Yeah. I was at that rally. I was at the championship rally. I was there. I witnessed
10th person there.
You and a dozen others.
I was going to say, you and your five best friends. I'm sure it was wonderful. All right. The Dodgers are looking to be the next team to win a championship. Maybe the second next team. Maybe the Lakers will get one before they do. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Dodgers and the San Francisco Giants, LZ, your nemesis, the Dodger nemesis. The Giants are the only team that have been the Dodgers more than once this year. Dodgers get a chance to sweep a series from them. They got to get the first one tonight. But you just look at what they're going to run out there tonight. And you've got Julio Urias, who is on the mound for the Dodgers tonight. And he was the guy that was the next Kershaw or Koufax, the left-handed guy that was going to dominate for the foreseeable future. And right now, this guy's fighting for his life just to be one of the first four or five guys mentioned. That's how crazy deep the Dodgers are on the mound.
Yeah, they are. And we need to figure out who this guy is. And he needs to figure out who he is. You know, maybe he was brought up too early. Maybe we hyped him up too early. I know when we first started the morning show, Sedano and I would jump up and down mispronouncing his name, but also just about the stuff that he had. And that, oh my God, this is the guy who's going to take over Kershaw, and it's going to be amazing, and blah, 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 blah. And it's been anything but. But you see flashes, right, Travis?
You see stuff.
And you go, it's not too late. I mean, we've been talking about him forever, but he's a kid.
I was just going to say.
When he debuted?
I was going to hit you with a little pop quiz, OZ. Take a guess how old he is.
How old he is now? I would say 22.
He turns 24 next week. He turns 24 next week. And you feel like it's like, hey, this guy's got to get his blank together or we're going to have to move on to another guy. He turns 24 next week. Come on, man. And this is the guy that you're kind of getting, not you, but we're kind of like, okay, do it or not. Because Walker Buehler just showed up and bam, he's an ace. Dustin May shows up and it's like, oh, damn, look at this dude. This is a problem. When we were talking with Adam Kennedy yesterday, he's saying, or was it Pedro? I forget which one of the two baseball guys we talked about. They're saying this is a Cy Young winner. That if he stays healthy, Dustin May has Cy Young Award winner stuff. That doesn't mean that Julio Urias has all of a sudden become a bum. It just means that they got a couple of other guys that got electric stuff as well. We've kind of forgotten about him. And so far this season, he's pitched really well. He's got an ERA of under 3. I mean, what do you want?
He has pitched really well, but we don't just do it really well. I mean, there is a reason why Kenta Maeda and Ryu are gone. You know? It's like when it's time for the squeeze and we start asking ourselves the real tough questions as an organization, even if you're pitching really, really well, which both guys I mentioned were, that doesn't mean you're going to be a Dodger. Like, that's the standard here. You know, we want Kershaw, Buehler, May. We don't want you 5 years in still trying to figure it out because we'll just let you go whether you're pitching well or not. We need to know what you're going to be sooner than that. And so it's unfair that he has to try to answer that question, Travis, during all of this weird-ass season, you know, where we're not even sure if we're going to be able to make it all the way through. And even if we do, what does that even mean? Because you only got 60 games. But he needs to be thinking about this as a re-audition period for him to be a Dodger for life. Because this team has no problem getting rid of guys who have stuff, but not enough stuff to stick around here. We don't keep charities like that.
No. They're not about that. They're about, okay, let's see it. And to Andrew Friedman in the front office's credit, they're really good at identifying who they're willing to let go and who they're not. The fact that, you know, that they said to the Red Sox, you can have this guy, but not that guy. You can have this guy over here, but not that guy over there. That we're going to keep some of these guys. They're off limits. Gavin Lux has been off limits for the Dodgers, right? That no one gets him in a trade. Even if it's about making a deal for Mookie Betts, you can't have him. Now, there are other guys that they are willing to part with. Urias has been hurt. He's been in some trouble along the way. So his name hasn't come up maybe as often as some other guys. But the Dodgers have made no effort to try to move him. Because they've been trying to pick up other players along the way. And he was one of those guys that they've identified as an important part of what they're doing moving forward. And this season in particular, when the whole world got turned upside down and inside out, he was still a major part of their plans. I think that even at 24 years old next week, this is not a loudly clicking clock. I think because they have so much depth in the starting rotation, if he doesn't pitch well at some point, maybe you can move him to the bullpen. Maybe you can find some other roles for him. But I think that they've got plans for this guy, whether it's this year or down the road, or I think he might have already been gone because he's been up for a while.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if they will – if they will punish him for being just solid in a very weird season. Just like I don't know if he can find security in being great in a really weird season. I just know that for his sake, it's best for him to try to piece himself together long enough to get another audition next season. Because even though he's really young, to your point, Travis, when we compare him to Dustin May and Walker Buehler, they're young too. And we're trying to decide if we want them to play or if we want Kershaw to play. And they're young too, but we don't have that same question mark when it comes to him, and that's not good for him.
That's the craziest thing about it all. When you're talking about who do you want on the mound in that big moment, right? And you say, you know, are we deciding between Buehler, May, or Kershaw? And I feel bad because I feel like I'm positioning this as somebody that doesn't like Clayton Kershaw. That's just not true. I think he's brilliant. I think he's fantastic. I think he's one of the great Dodgers of all time. He's a deadlock cinch Hall of Fame. All those wonderful things we say about him. He's going to have that number 22 hanging in the outfield with all those other retired numbers. He's one of those dudes, okay? But he's not in the decision tree, LC. He's third between those three guys. He's third. And that's both a credit to those other two guys and just the reality of Clayton Kershaw's status in where he is in his career right now. That if this was 5 years ago, we were not even having this conversation. Even if you had this weird timeline where Clayton Kershaw was 5 years younger and these guys were still exactly where they are right now, then Clayton Kershaw is the easy decision. But right now, Clayton Kershaw is the clear third in a must-win, have to get out of here tonight. Kershaw is my third pick in that draw because he just doesn't have that you don't have a chance tonight stuff anymore. If he doesn't locate, they're going to hit him. If Buehler misses some spots, he's still going to get you out. If May misses some spots, he's still going to get you out. Kershaw, Kenley Jansen falls into this category too. They've entered that phase of their career where when they're right, they're still as good as anybody. But when they're not at their very best, they're more gettable than they've ever been in their entire life, unlike May and Buehler.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely correct about that. But, I mean, come on. Are we really worried about our starting pitching? As long as they're healthy.
Not right now.
I feel good. I mean, again, for Urias, for him, in order to solidify his place as a Dodger, he really needs this season to shine, in my opinion. I don't think he'll be back next year if he doesn't. It's not fair because, as I said before, 60 games is weird, blah, 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 blah. But you know there are other guys that they have their eyes on, whether in their farm system or just picking up. And while he may have been the one before Buehler and May to have all the fanfare as the heir apparent to Kershaw, it hasn't worked out so far. Injuries and other issues have derailed that. It's not too late for him to be a Dodger for life, but starts like tonight are important for him in order to guarantee that for himself moving forward.
You know, it's funny how we talk about this season being so weird, and it is. It absolutely is. You wonder if this isn't, and I'm making a very dangerous assumption here that everybody stays healthy, and that is a huge assumption, and I understand that. But you wonder if for the Dodgers, this isn't a better setup. And what I mean by that is this, that because it is so odd, because there are so many variables that have been eliminated, that if it just comes down to a pure who's got better players environment, the only team that can even kind of sort of stand on the same level with them is the Yankees. That if we're removing some of the vagaries of baseball because you got to travel and you're in this hotel and this guy is pitching in his home park and he's this and he's that and the fans get him going. If that stuff has been, and I don't want to say it's eliminated because you still got to go travel, but if it's been reduced to the point where talent becomes the ultimate deciding factor, nobody's in a better position to go through a bubble than the Dodgers.
No, you're absolutely right about that. We have the right mix of maturity and leadership, discipline. But as I've been saying all along, we also have the backstory. We have a backstory coming into this year that no other team really has. And that backstory, more than anything else, Travis, I think gives us an edge. What's going on in the outside world? We got an axe to grind. We're not a team on the rise. We're a team on a revenge tour. We've been hoodwinked. We've been bamboozled.
Ripped off.
Ripped off. And there are a lot of guys on this squad that has individual stories that need to be rewritten, and then a franchise that needs to be validated for all the great moves that is made. Just like the question I asked Mark Anthony Kay, great regular seasons, dog, but you haven't lifted a trophy of any sort yet. And it's almost like the Dodgers. Yeah, you got these division titles, but we know we're past that now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we know that's a speed bump now. We're no longer celebrating those. So you need to be able to step your game up accordingly. And I think the Dodgers have all of that going into it, that gives them an edge in addition to being the deepest and most talented roster in the league?
You know, you talk about the revenge tour, and I'm with you for it. And we saw it when they played each other a week or so ago. But Archie Bradley for the Diamondbacks was sitting in the bullpen last night when one of his teammates hit a home run off of the Astros, and he threw the bird to the Astro players that, while maybe fans can't get into these guys the way that we would have liked, the way that you were getting ready to do down at the Big A at the beginning of the season when they were going to play the Angels, the other guys, the other 29 teams in Major League Baseball, they know. They're going to carry that. And baseball players, this is one of the few times when their ridiculous, vindictive, juvenile nature, I think, is going to work really, really well. Because, well, maybe there's no fans, every last one of these players remembers what they did, and they're going to use every opportunity to whack those guys over the head with it, like Bradley did yesterday, like Joe Kelly did a week or so ago. It's not forgotten. It will not be forgotten when we're all out of this bubble, finally, hopefully sooner than later. All right, Lakers can't shoot. But is that actually not the problem at all? LeBron dropped another one of his very cryptic messages. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. So, LZ, it's pretty easy to identify. You don't need to be Hubie Brown to know that the Lakers are losing, because you can't go 2-for-19 from behind the line and win games in the NBA, especially on the heels of going 5-for-37 the night before. That's pretty easy. Lakers are playing poorly, and they're shooting poorly. LeBron didn't play last night, but in Joe Vardon in The Athletic was reporting that LeBron said something before the game that there is an off-court issue going on with the Lakers right now that he can't control and that he'd rather not talk about. If we know anything about LeBron James, is that he does not say anything without thinking about what the impact of that statement is going to be before he says it. What's the impact of this segment or this statement? And what's LeBron trying to get done? Because saying, hey, look, we got an off-the-court problem, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, and I don't want to talk about it, he obviously wants us to talk about it, or he wouldn't say anything at all.
Yeah, the outcome statement is that now everyone from Anthony Davis all the way down to Antetokounmpo is going to be asked what's going on. And if there's ever a time in which these players should be grateful that they aren't in a locker room with a bunch of reporters, now should be that time. Because we're handcuffed by the Zoom press conferences that we get to do. And on top of that, the people in charge of those Zoom calls get to dictate who gets to ask the questions. So we can't sneak up on you, Travis, and go, LeBron James said, what's going on? Do you have anything? Yeah, we can't do that now. So they're safeguarded from that. But they aren't safeguarded from us talking about it on air. And they aren't safeguarded from other players wondering what he's talking about. And so I don't know what he's referring to, and I don't know if it's impacting the bottom line, but I do know that it's going to impact the roster, because players are going to be asking when you walk by in the locker room, when you walk by in the hotel, they're going to be asking each other at the swimming pool, and the free reporters who are going to be participating in these Zoom conversations with players, they're going to ask. And the players that are selected to be there for that day and their Zoom calls, they're going to need to have an answer.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I wonder if this isn't purposeful on a whole nother level. That LeBron understands the media better than most of us that are in this business. He understands that everything he does is going to get a reaction. And I wonder if this wasn't a, you know what, we're just not clicking right now. We can't make a shot. We don't look right. We're struggling a little bit defensively in the backcourt. We've got these sorts of problems going on right now. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to throw everybody off this. I'm going to let everybody take a deep breath. I'm going to let everybody kind of know that we're playing a game on these guys and say, hey, there's something going on right here. Just knowing that that will be the story, and we don't have to ask questions like, hey, why have you guys made 5 of your last 56 three-point attempts? Because that's a much more difficult question to answer, as opposed to just, look, man, what? The issue? I wonder if this isn't just a red herring, a diversion, whatever you might want to call it, that LeBron's just kind of putting out there to take attention away from the fact that they're just playing lousy basketball right now.
I mean, and if that's the goal, you know, mission accomplished, we are talking about something else. I don't know if what is impacting the team off the court, as LeBron insinuated, is necessarily going to explain why they can't hit an open shot. I mean, I think those are still two different things. But I'm willing to let LeBron lead the way that he knows how, and this is part of his method. It's always been part of his method. My favorite was that Arthur cartoon with the bald fist.
That was great.
And just sit up, and it was just like, first of all, I didn't even know he knew that character. You know, he's not that old. And then second of all, what the hell, man? Like, you're in a conversation for GOAT, and this is how you're communicating with your teammates with cartoon fists?
Like, it was Arthur, crazy. No less. Like, not even like Arthur, Bugs no Bunny less. Or you know, Mickey Mouse or something like that. He went deep. He went deep to Arthur.
It was a deep dive, but you know what came out of that deep dive? A trip to the finals. So I'm not going to mess with it, dog. I'm not going to mess with it. So if this is his leadership method, until he falls flat on his face a couple of times, I'm just going to say it works.
All right. So right now, Frank Vogel gets injected with truth serum. And you get that. Is what going through his head with the way his team's playing right now a WTF? Like, what is going on around here? Or is it, we've got LeBron and Anthony Davis, we're fine. This is a weird stretch where we can't make a shot, but I've got LeBron, I've got AD, I'm not that worried about it.
I think he's not worried about it because he always knew he had LeBron and AD. Now he may have coups. I think, if anything, if you're that coaching staff, you're looking around going, huh, has he figured it out? Is he ready now to be that guy? Because remember, the most stressful part of the job was not managing LeBron and AD, but managing the talent around them, especially on nights in which Kuz struggled to reach double figures in scoring. If Kuz has figured it out, that takes a huge load off of Frank and the team and the coaching staff. Because now you get to say things like, oh, well, I could just let Kuz be out there by himself for 5 minutes because now I believe he can carry this offense.
Well,
Before, you always had to make sure that at least one of those guys was on the floor because you just never know he's going to get out of Kuz. But if the Kuz is balling right now, Travis, if this is the one that's going to be with us for the postseason, that takes a huge burden off the coaching staff.
I would agree with that, except for one exception, and that is that he's going really well while everyone else is going bad. And that's not necessarily 1 + 1 = 2, but if he was looking like he looks while simultaneously the rest of the team looked like they looked prior to going into the bubble, I'd be with you then. Ah, okay, sweet, we got that third guy. But his ascendance has been correlated with the rest of the team playing like crap. And I don't know if one gets us the same answer. We've seen this before where when he's the guy, when he's the focal point, LeBron didn't play last night, and he's getting more shots because no one else can make anything. That's a good news. I just wonder if he can keep it up when everyone else kind of goes back to where they were pre-lockdown.
Yeah, if other guys are knocking down shots, we'll see. But he's getting it done by himself. He's getting it done playing with LeBron, with AD. He's getting it done on catch and shoots. But more importantly, he's getting it done with the other things. You know, so even if, to your point, Travis, the other guys start getting hot and they're knocking down jumpers and his shooting opportunities dwindle a little bit, if he's the Kuz that's going to chase down and get blocks off James Harden like that, we good, dog. We good.
Yeah,
because that's all we want.
I wouldn't count on it.
I don't even need the rest of the guys to get hot. I'll take cool. At this point, anything other than ice cold, tepid, I mean, it's something that's north of where they are right now. It's a subarctic 2 of 19, 5 of 37 in the last couple of games. We'll ask all of this. Nobody knows more. Ramona Shelburne joins us next on the morning show, 710 ESPN.